I'm Kevin Middleton.
And I'm Samantha Berg. And this is The Bridge to Everywhere. Welcome to The Bridge to Everywhere. Join us as we explore health, community, and culture from a holistic perspective. Health topics addressed on our show are for information and entertainment and should not be taken as medical advice. If you have a medical condition, please consult an appropriate care provider. So before we get started, I want to introduce everyone to Jessica Hogan. So Jessica Hogan owns Fireweed Fitness, a fitness education and wellness consulting company. She holds a master's degree in human movement with an emphasis on corrective exercise and injury prevention. She is a certified personal trainer through the American Council on Exercise, which is ACE, and the National Academy of Sports Medicine, NASM, and specializes in the practical application of scientific concepts. As a fitness professional for over 10 years, she continues to explore professional development opportunities as the industry changes and enjoys hiking, biking, and skiing in her infinite spare time. So welcome to the program, Jessica. Great to have you here.
Good evening.
So we want to talk a little bit about what inspired you to become a personal trainer in the first place and talk about, you know, how does one become a personal trainer? What kind of education do you acquire? And then why would one want to search out a personal trainer? I know a lot of people run into personal trainers in a gym setting, but, you know, do you work outside of the gym setting? So what other kinds of things do you do? I'm sure the scope of what your practice is way beyond what the average person thinks about when they think personal trainer. So we want to get into that. So I guess let's just start. You know, hi, welcome, and tell us a little bit about, you know, why you became a personal trainer in the first place.
Well, good evening. Probably because I could work with people. I think that's, I originally thought I was going to be a physical therapist, and I worked in that setting in college as an intern and decided that it wasn't quite as exciting as I had hoped it would be. And I wasn't that interested in specializing in just physical therapy. So I did a 180 and decided to specialize in forensic science. And I also happened to do personal training. And my background with that was just exercising. I've always been quite active in sports and was interested in pursuing that. I'm also really fascinated by the human body. And personal training was something that I could do and meet individuals who were interested in reaching a goal and watch the progression. And that's probably my favorite part, is meeting and exceeding our goals.
Great. So let's talk about what actually is a personal trainer. What kinds of things do you do?
And that can depend. I was thinking about that. There's probably as many different types of trainers as there are individuals who are interested in pursuing personal training. And when I think of it, and I think that probably most everybody is also seeing this, we've got a lot of media and hype and the typical personal trainer in a gym setting that is maybe yelling at you and encouraging you to do a little bit better, but I'm not much of a yeller. Uh-huh. So I'm probably not going to do that in one of our sessions, but I'm most interested in figuring out what it is that you're interested in accomplishing, what your goals would be. But more importantly, why? What would make that successful for you, and the reasons why?
And do you help them explore that? Because sometimes people might actually just think, "Well, I want to be fit, or I want to look better," and you know, maybe that's not actually the deepest impulse. Maybe that would give them inspiration for a week or two, but to find a deeper motive that's really going to carry the long haul. Maybe a lot of, I don't know. Do you find that people need some support in that?
Definitely. I find that even I need support in that. And I think that one avenue would be to explore personal training. Another avenue is to have a support system or friends that you go and you meet and do things with or in an active setting. So for personal training, I mean, that can be in a gym setting. I do that as well as outside of the gym setting. So I think one of the things with fitness is that it needs to be consistent, but it needs to be something that would be convenient and something that you're interested in doing. So I also find that we are most successful when we have identified that deeper interest and or we have a specific goal in mind. Oftentimes that is, I'm going to go on vacation. I need to look good in a bathing suit. I'm going to get married. I would like to, you know, you have to have this, something to initiate that motivation, because as a personal trainer, I can provide a little bit, but you still need to show up to your appointments. You still need to have some kind of reason that is going to make you want to do more. It's not always fun.
Do you get people who are, let's say they've decided, oh, I'm turning 40 and I've always wanted to run a marathon, so I'm going to do that. Or, you know, I think maybe I'll just, you know, they go from nothing to, I think I've always thought about doing an Ironman, so I want to do, I would like to train for that. So how do I do that? Like, do you get people who start from zero and just want to go and do that, do something like that, you know, all of a sudden?
I would
they
say,
hit a milestone?
I would say yes, absolutely. Yeah. That would be one of the reasons why it might be interesting to hire a personal uh-huh. trainer or something that would be useful for that. But I would also say that that takes a lot of hard work. Mm-hmm. So I think another aspect of the job is education, and to be able to educate individuals about, well, what might be realistic, and teaching them about how to set goals that are realistic. And there's a method for that. And
let's talk about that. That sounds fun.
Okay.
Yeah, and, you know, sometimes really developing fitness and achieving means being able to tolerate not feeling good, right? So there's, you know, it's just hard work involved, and it's not always when you feel like doing a workout. Say more about that.
Yeah. Well, that's true. I think that one of the things that personal training can offer is that support system to maybe push you beyond your comfort zone. It's very hard to do that on your own. It's very hard for me to do that on my own. You have to have typically other individuals that are extending you beyond those, what you consider to be your limitations. And just to, in setting goals, we use a SMART technique. So that is just an acronym for setting goals that are specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, and time-bound.
Great.
So it needs to be specific. I would like to lose 10 pounds. And it needs to be measurable. So we need to make an assessment of where you are today and set out a plan to achieve that goal. And it needs to be attainable. So in order to do that, we need to commit to exercising or perhaps a diet change for a certain amount of time. And then that goal, of course, is going to be relevant to what you're interested in achieving. Perhaps you're interested in losing 10 pounds because to run that 5K, it's going to be a lot easier if you were to lose the 10 pounds first. And that it's time-bound, so that we are setting specific goals. I'm going to exercise 2 times a week for the next 4 weeks because that's going to help me achieve my goal.
So, and how often with your clients are you seeing them once a week or generally, or are you seeing them twice a week, or does it really depend on what kinds of goals that you guys, so you sit down and you go through this goal setting and you come up with a plan, and then does that determine how frequently you work with them, or do you sometimes coach them over the phone instead of actually in person? Like, how does that whole process?
It could, and I think I probably don't do as much phone coaching as you could. So there's fair amount of phone coaching as well as internet and programming that is occurring outside of gym setting, and the number of times that I work with individuals would depend on their goals, but it also depends on schedule. I mean, because we've all got life happening, and what I might be able to make a workout that you could do on your own, and we meet once a week, so anywhere between 1 to 3 times a week. Typically, when I'm starting with new clients, it's much easier for us to meet 2 or 3 times a week for the first couple weeks just in order to establish what exercises and what movements are most effective and what you like and what you don't like.
So. And do you set up like a sort of a package for that, like in terms of a fee structure, or is it every time that you have an interaction with them, there's a cost associated with it? Just curious, like how that works, so people who are thinking about it would kind of have an idea of what they're committing to financially, because a lot of, you know, people have goals and they go, well, I know I need somebody to help me with that, but I also have financial goals that I have to maintain. So how does that part work in terms of the payment deal? Is it, do you negotiate that with the person for what, once you've set the goals with them, or is it just pretty much a flat rate each time you have a session with them? How does that work?
Well, for me, it ends up being more of a flat rate, and you can purchase packages, and oftentimes at some facilities or gyms, if you purchase the package, you will receive some bit of discount. My packages, just in general, I'll still have a group session, or at least if we would purchase individual sessions, I want to have a purpose for, let's say, for six sessions, we're going to accomplish these goals, and so that we at least have that established from the beginning. And generally, the first meeting, you typically have a consult. This is a good opportunity. It's more of a meet and greet or an interview, if you will, and I would set out a time to establish goals, but more or less, whether or not our schedules were compatible, are we compatible? This is your time to ask questions that you might have of a personal trainer, and in order to establish whether or not you would have a good relationship.
What do you find are some of the most common challenges that people are facing when they really do want to make changes? Whether it's weight loss, or if it's, you know, trying to get an exercise program going, are there some common themes that you find yourself encountering a lot?
I think probably the biggest one is time. We've got a busy schedule, we've got work, we've got families, we've got other commitments, and it's often very hard for us to commit to ourselves. And what I've found is it's necessary. I mean, one thing pushes another. Means that, you know, if you're interested, you have that specific goal, then you've got the initiative or that internal motivation to dedicate some time and money, ultimately, to yourself. But families oftentimes are a challenging.
Sure. You know, in my own experience with exercise, there's times when, I got to work out. I want to do this, but I really don't want to do it. But you kind of drag yourself out, and you get up in the morning earlier, and you go and you go to the gym. You work out, and you feel great. Like, wow, that's awesome! I'm glad I did that. And another morning, you know, it's the same thing. And at a certain point, I just realized it's just easier to want to do it, to not actually even listen to that voice in my head and the first thing in the morning that says, "Oh, I don't want to go to the gym." To just not even listen to that because it's wrong, and. And would that work for anybody else?
No, I'm laughing a little bit because in part, some of it, a big portion of the challenges that we face are the mental and our limitations. It's not that we can't bench press, you know, 50 pounds or 100 pounds, but we are telling ourselves that we can't, or I can't hike to the top of that mountain, or I can't run a marathon. When if we were to break it down just a little bit and we start, say, with a 5K, it will become much easier. I never thought that I would be able to ride 100 miles on a bike. And then to be able to accomplish that, I find is pretty exhilarating. So in part, we do need to develop a habit of just going and either to the gym or to do your exercise or going for a walk every day. Because at some point, going for that walk every day, you'll find that you end up missing it. And it no longer becomes something that you don't necessarily want to do, but that you are actually interested in it and would miss it if you didn't.
Great.
So I have a question about, we were just talking about people not thinking that they can do something, but I wonder in the position that you're in, what I often see are people who who over-exercise. You know, so there are the under-exercisers who don't exercise enough, and then there's the other side of it. You know, there are people who I would actually term as exercise addicts. You know, that's what they do, and if they don't, if they miss their workout, it's look out. You know, I mean, in our culture, we think that's a good thing. You know, that it's a healthy thing to be addicted to, but I see that people can actually do damage to their bodies if they don't train right, so they haven't worked up to that level of exercise, or if they're not checking in and listening on a given day. Like if they think, you know, every day they go out, they can do this, you know, this amount of distance, but they're not necessarily checking in, paying attention. You know, maybe today, if they're normally used to running 10 miles, but maybe they got, you know, only 6 hours of sleep last night, or they didn't really eat really well, or they were, you know, it might be better to run 5 or 6 miles and do some yoga. You know? And so how do you coach people to kind of, like, there are limits where we think, oh, I can't do that, you know, and that's wrong because they really could push way beyond that. But then there are sometimes reasons to back off a little bit and have some recovery time, and also, you know, so that we don't get hurt, so that we can keep doing it. So how do you create that balance as a personal trainer?
That's a very good question as well. And I think that I give permission. I think that's one of the big things. And in my ability to educate on some of the overtraining principles. I mean, typically those that are have a tendency to train as hard and as much are also paying attention to some numbers. So whether that is heart rate or how much I ran or what my stats are.
So there are overtraining principles?
There are.
So let's talk about those, because I guess that's – I didn't even know that there was such a thing, but that's great, because I feel like that's really important to get out there, particularly in our culture, because we're kind of a go, 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 do, do, do sort of culture, and we forget about, you know, like in order to do that, you have no system just continually goes up forever. Like we have to be able to go in and rest a little bit to sustain that. And then also as we age, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, that you can't run a marathon when you're 90 if you want to try it, but there are reasons to, like, do a little bit less so you can do more later, like that all out kind of thing, like the thinking that we can sustain that level of energy, you know, that we had in our 20s or 30s, that we're going to be able to do all that kind of stuff in our 70s and 80s is maybe a little bit unrealistic. I mean, maybe it's possible for some people. Some people are born with a huge amount of reserves and resources, but if we kind of protect those resources a little bit, we can do more in the long term and we're not going to get hurt, as opposed to like trying to go all out just to get a number, you know, just to get like a second faster.
Right. And I think that I subscribe to that. Mm-hmm. I mean, saving just a little bit in order to do a little bit more. Sometimes slowing down a little bit is actually speeding up in the long run.
That's great. Sometimes you got to go backwards to go forwards.
It's an old joke from my father. It's like an old little, one of those little rallying cries he's given me over the years. You know, another thing is, as folks age, and we see folks maybe, you know, in their 50s and 60s who've run or been physically fit most of their life and they've trained hard, but then things start happening like tendonitis, plantar fasciitis, degenerative hip issues, knee issues, and things like that. And I wonder how much of that could be avoided if there were really a clear understanding of overtraining principles.
Yeah, and not only that, I sat on an airplane one time next to a surgical nurse who was, her job was assisting in knee replacements and I think hip replacements, and sure, her comment was, oh yeah, well, you know, if you run all your life, you're gonna wear out your knees. Or if you run all your life, you're going to wear out your hips. Like that was, but that was her reality, because that was what she dealt with, was a surgeon who was replacing those joints, and that's all she saw. And I don't necessarily believe that either, that that's necessary, that that has to happen. I think our bodies are designed for movement. So I don't know that just because, you know, we're using them means that we're going to wear them out. But if we're not using them wisely, we're probably going to wear them out. You know, if we're not giving them what they need to restore, we'll probably wear them out. So yeah, let's talk about overtraining from your perspective.
And maybe if form actually has something to do with that too.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say efficiency. So in movement, because we can create the movement, but it may not be the optimal movement. And so we do have a tendency in our postures and in movements to favor the least path of resistance. And while we can still continue to run, it might not be the most efficient for us to do or optimal. And that can create injuries. And it could be even just stubbing your toe, and that will change the way that you're walking or you're running for that week, and then that could tighten up one muscle cause an injury that you weren't planning for. So injury is one of the big things. Mm-hmm. But typically, I think if we're at that point, then we might have already passed some of the warning signs. And there's a number of warning signs, but I was just mentioning one as far as being heart rate training. Like if your heart rate is super low and you're not able to raise it when you're training for long distances, that mm-hmm. could be one warning sign or indication that you might be overtraining. I'd also say just energy levels. If you're not able to recover as you would normally, then that's going to be another indicator. You know, all factors considering that would be the same as far as your diet and your sleep, because mm-hmm. if we're not sleeping and we're not eating well, then we don't really have the ability to recover and or produce the energy that would be necessary to create that activity.
The heart rate piece is really interesting to me because, a lot of people assume that, oh, if I have a low heart rate, you know, it's 57 or it's 40. Or I think at some point in his career, Chuck Norris had some kind of like ridiculously low heart rate, like 37. And everybody reveres those low heart rates like, oh, well, the heart's working less hard. So, you know, it's pumping less frequently to get the blood around the body. But from a Chinese medicine standpoint, once it drops below, like the optimum heart rate from our standpoint is somewhere between like 68 and 74. And once somebody is getting into the low 60s and high 50s, I would think even just from reading their pulse, like I don't have to know, I can just read their pulse, and my initial thought is likely that this person is overtraining. Especially like what you said, if they can't get the pulse higher and sustain it. And so it's kind of counterintuitive to most people thinking that a low pulse rate is good. But from my standpoint, it says that the person's actually depleting their internal energy and their heart energy in Chinese medicine.
And it's not uncommon that actually mm-hmm. is paired with depression, as it turns out.
Yeah, it's actually...
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it kind of goes... A low heart rate kind of goes with those sort of things that we associate with depression.
Tending more towards melancholy, mm-hmm. Which makes sense. You know, if there's not as much circulation, there's just not as much vitality in the system. And, you know, if a person is tending to have always been very physically fit and active in the world and not feeling as much energy, and then it kind of snowballs a little bit.
And we'll sometimes see people, too, who have the really low heart rates because they've been overtraining and then they get injured and then they can't train.
And then they're definitely depressed.
Yeah. And then psychology sets in.
Right. Yes, exactly. Yeah. So what do you do in that situation?
Well, I think that it depends. One of the things that I try and encourage is probably some cross training. You know, if you're a runner, have you been swimming? Mm-hmm. You know, how about cycling? Have you tried that? So a lot of people that are high-intensity endurance athletes, there are a couple of other endurance activities that are useful to explore. So the other thing is being able to take a break. And that, I think, for that type of athlete, is hard to do.
Well, especially, I think, if your identity is tied into how fast you can run or how frequently you can run. Like, again, it's like that's why sometimes I see exercises as just an addiction, because it's culturally acceptable, sort of healthy addiction, most people don't see it that way. So that's what, you know, I like. So when I see that kind of dynamic going on, and that's why I probably, most people don't like it when I say that, but it's doing damage to your body in ways that, other things that most people associate with being bad could do just as bad as not exercising at all, or eating a lot of sugar, or doing some sort of drugs or whatever. It's not really obvious because the person looks good on the outside. That's why I think it's a little bit confusing for people, because people can look really good, healthy, and physically fit, but they can actually be doing that at the expense of their internal organs.
Indeed.
So, yeah.
And
uh-huh.
But it's quite the opposite. You could have some that don't look quite as fit and be just as healthy.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And you can still achieve fitness and not necessarily look as though you were. Ultimately, it's a stress that's put on the body.
Mm-hmm.
And when we talk about stress just in general, we like work stress. and what that feels like and what it causes us to do in our activity, slow it down, sleep a little more, avoid things. Mm-hmm. That would be very similar to exercise and to a certain extent putting stress on the body through that mechanism can be beneficial in a number of ways. But as with anything else, if it's too extreme or too much too quickly, then we might end up causing more trouble to our bodies or to our systems than we would otherwise.
Seems like there's an important capacity as a body awareness, that people become more in tune to their bodies. What do you think?
For sure. But that's something that I specialize in and or am more aware of. There's so many things that we can improve upon that you're not necessarily paying attention to, one of those things being posture or how we're moving. I do assessments, movement assessments. So you've got your posture. What does it look like when you're not moving? And then let's do some exercises and see how that changes how your body's going to work.
So, and how long would you spend with somebody for the first time? That you said you do more of a consultation for the first time. So how long are you spending with them, and what kinds of information are you getting? We've got the goals that they're looking for, and you've got a postural assessment. What else are you doing?
We've got a couple things, and it depends on the setting for that. Like a meet and greet would be 30 minutes or so. Are we compatible? Do our schedules meet? Can we set up our first session? And within our first session, we're typically going to devote that to assessments and figuring out what your baseline are. So not everybody needs to have measurements, but those that would be interested in that, you could do body fat, you can do measurements, you can do how much are you lifting or what's your flexibility right now. We can do movement assessments, and I find that my first few sessions are often focused on how to move more efficiently. How can I move better? Great, you're doing the movement. Let's try it this way. Do you notice a difference? And if so, in which way? And hopefully what I'm helping restore or establish with that is efficiency in their movement and ultimately minimizing the chance of injury.
And so you have to have pretty broad range of education to do that, because I think about, like, well, if I'm a swim coach, I'm just focusing on, you know, on stroke technique with, you know, in that domain, you know, and taking care of my swimmers and what they do. But you're talking about, well, you might have somebody who's swimming one day, they're running another day, they're changing from, you know, they've just read the Born to Run book, so they've decided they're going to pick up barefoot running, so they're going to use minimalist shoes. Or, well, I was using minimalist shoes, but I heard about this thing called chi running, so I'm going to go do that. Or I just got this fat tire bike, so now I'm going to, you know, pick up biking. Or, you know what, I think I want to learn how to telemark ski. I mean, you've got such a range of things that people are doing, and you have to be sort of fluent. And how do you balance all that as a personal trainer?
Well, you recognize that you can't train everybody. I think ultimately that we end up specializing and working within certain populations. And with that, I mean, I have a tendency to work with beginning exercises or corrective exercises if you're coming off of an injury, and where my interests are with biking and skiing, that it would be very easy for me to facilitate that in a gym setting, or if somebody would like to become more active in either, you know, any of the sports that I'm already currently doing, that would be very easy for me. I also find that I do a fair amount of research. I know that my schedule doesn't really permit me to work with endurance athletes, because that type of training requires 3 or 4 times a week, and programming, you know, changes every 4 to 6 weeks. And so I'm not bodybuilding either. So hiring the right personal trainer to meet the goals would be the first, but also having a trainer that would be certified by a nationally recognized agency, I guess, will assist. oftentimes further education. So we have bachelor's in exercise science or a master's in kinesiology or human movement or some other sort of exercise-related education, because the more education, the much easier it is to adapt and modify as needed.
What's the oldest client you've worked with?
Great question. I think about 74, and she'd never worked out or lifted weights in her career or lifetime. But, you know, we got her lifting 10-pound weights,
awesome.
Bicep curls.
So we're going to take a short break right now, and we'll be right back. And we're talking about personal training, and then you're listening to The Bridge to Everywhere.
Community radio is what you make it. If you want to be involved with Radio Free Palmer, contact us on the web, radiofreepalmer.org. We're looking for ideas, we're looking for volunteers, and we're looking for help. Thank you so much, and enjoy.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Samantha Berg, and I'm here with Kevin Middleton and Jessica Hogan, the personal trainer. And we're here talking about personal training, why you would want to hire a personal trainer, what kinds of things do you look for in a personal trainer, what is a personal trainer? So we're getting into all that. If you have any particular questions that you would like to ask about personal training, you can post a note on our Facebook page. It's www.facebook.com/bridgetoeverywhere. So feel free to post a note there, and we will get those questions answered. Also, Jessica, you have a website, correct?
I do have a website.
Okay, what's your website?
It's www.fireweedfitness.com.
And is that just a splash page, or is there more information about you up on there?
It's just a splash page for right now. Okay. So I've got my contact information on there, and it's including telephone number, so just a good way to contact me.
Great, awesome. And so we were just talking about your oldest client and somebody who'd never exercised before. And so what's your youngest client that you've worked with?
I think probably 13 or so. Yeah,
so
12, 13.
So,
new. Go ahead.
Okay. I was just going to say like a middle school, high school student who wants to start getting fit. Kind of
basketball.
Basketball.
Yeah, sports.
Okay.
Yeah, so it would be sports specific typically for high school students. Yes.
Great.
And how do they find you? Is this word of mouth primarily?
I think word of mouth is the best way. I mean, that because then you're getting a recommendation from somebody who has been successful or likes you. I mean, it's much easier to find somebody that way. But they often are finding local gyms will have personal trainers. There's also a new profile that's been set up on Idea Fitness. It's Idea Fitness Connect. So just looking on in your area, you can search for personal trainers that are in your area.
So, and we were talking a little bit about what you specialize in, that you tend to work with people who are just starting exercising or people who are coming off an injury and trying to get back into an exercise program and not hurt themselves necessarily. What else would your ideal client look like? I know there's maybe like five different versions of your ideal client, but the kinds of things, because it's sounding like there's just so many different directions you can go with personal training. And you were saying, for instance, that you're not necessarily a match for endurance athletes just because of the time that it would be required to work with them and how many times you would need to meet. So just curious, like if you were going to create that, these are the kind of people that would be a great match and these are the kinds of people that might need to work with somebody else. So how would you define that?
So what I've learned is that that ideal clients for me are those that are interested and committed to themselves. They're interested in meeting me at the gym. Like I'm not going to call you excessively, you know, to get you.
You're not going to wake them up and show up with the coffee and the bagel and shake them out of bed.
I'm not that trainer.
Okay. Yeah.
But So they've got to meet me there, and they...
And can you pay people to do that around here, by the way? Are there people who will do that?
Oh, I probably.
I'm just curious, in Palmer, Alaska, if you can find somebody who will come to your door and wake you up and put you in the car and drag you to the gym. I guess if people are willing to pay for it, though.
They could, yeah. I mean, it could happen that way.
Yeah.
But it's not me.
But that's not what you do.
It's okay. not what I do.
So they have to be at least motivated enough to meet you where they said they were going to meet you at the time they said they were going to meet you.
Right.
Okay.
But, you know, one thing, I think probably the biggest thing is they have to be interested in making a change. Mm-hmm. And that means that maybe they have to face some of the challenges in meeting, you know, what's prevented them from being successful in the past and identifying what those reasons are. And sometimes we don't want to look at those reasons. And it's helpful in the progression, or at least in being successful.
Any examples on some of those reasons that you can come up with?
You know, I think not right offhand. I mean,
okay,
it's
we'll get
so
back to it.
Yeah, it's so dynamic. Uh-huh. We think about specifics, but ultimately, I think we get very busy with life.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So and so we've got, so we know the person needs to at least be self-motivated, and what else?
So interested in setting some goals. Mm-hmm. So I think it just works better. And by that, I mean I find it's much easier if we can find some goal, like I'm going on a trip and I want to run a 5K on that trip, and so having some long-term goal that is more than just wanting to lose weight and be fit, mm-hmm. because what does that mean? And it's a little bit different for everybody. I'd like to know what that looks like mm-hmm. for an individual, and they need to be willing to talk about that.
Do you ever frame it as fitness for life? That really, ultimately, don't we want to be fit for the rest of our lives, and that really that should be our intention. That really is the motivating factor, is to live long and live well, and not to have these starts and stops along the way. And so it seems like this longer term perspective would open up, so it doesn't have to all happen at once, but the intention for long term health and wellness be at the sort of essence of any effort.
And I think that you've said that very well, and that encompasses what my intention is. And those clients that have that interest, and they may not know that they have that interest initially, but I work best with those. And as opposed to somebody who would like to lose 20 pounds in 2 weeks because they have to, you know.
Right, they have to fit into the dress.
Yeah. Right, that's not going to work.
Right.
It doesn't work for anybody, and it just causes so many problems, and people will hurt themselves with all kinds of methods to try to accomplish that.
And spend a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it takes a little bit of time. And if we become unfit, if we become unhealthy, then it took us some time to get there. It's going to take us some time to make improvements in that arena.
Oh, no. We're a quick fix society. I'm paying you. You're going to get me to lose those 5 pounds or 10 pounds or 20 pounds. And you're going to do it in 2 weeks. Right.
But you have to listen to everything I say.
I have to do everything you say. Okay,
right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's pretty tough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if you actually pay attention to how you feel when you exercise rather than what the scale says that day, mm-hmm. you know, it's actually a really fun, it's fun to be fit. It's fun to actually exercise. It's fun to get out and do and be active. And I do know, just through the work of our patients, is that the fixation on the scale and it, you know, and it actually dropping at the rate that they'd like can actually obscure the fact that they're having fun.
Well, that's the thing, that you have to find something that is fun, because going to the gym is not fun for everybody. And but maybe finding out about snowshoeing would be some sort of activity that would get them outside or moving a little bit more than they are normally. And I like to be able to help people identify what that is so that they can have the consideration that this is something that is fun instead of a drudge.
Mm-hmm. How do you snap them out of a rut? I mean, when somebody's really, you know, just stuck, and I don't do this well. I've never been good at this. And they've got, it's a pretty, you know, pretty strong idea in their head about their limitations, or just in a pretty deeply ingrained habit. Do you have any special ways of approaching that?
Special ways. I think that probably depends on the individual. But what I thought of initially is to get their attention off whatever it is that they think they're not very good at, or are continuing to, you know, run into the wall with. So let's back off from that a little bit. Maybe do some cross training, or let's pay attention to something else. And I bring back that 5K, because if we just start training for a 5K and now you're not necessarily paying attention to the scale quite as much because you're just doing what you need to train for this, then I've seen changes happen more quickly that way than just paying attention to the scale. And I think about if you just watch the pot of water, that it takes much longer for it to boil.
So what other modalities do you find that you need to incorporate? I know we were talking about there's a psychological component for the person who's been a, you know, intense exerciser for a long time and all of a sudden can't exercise, and that person might need to have a conversation with the therapist potentially. You know, somebody who's got flexibility, you know, just they can't get past, they're really stiff, and, you know, and the exercise that they're doing isn't going to work. Maybe they might need to go, you know, do a little bit of yoga or work with somebody who can coach them specifically on yoga moves, or maybe somebody needs to get regular massages. Like, are there any sorts of modalities that you find yourself referring people to often, you know, and saying, oh, you know, you should try this. This would be really helpful as an adjunct to the work that you're doing with me.
Well, definitely. I mean, I'd like to be able to build a community of individuals that I'd be able to refer to, because I'm not able to do it all.
Right.
I'm not qualified to do it all, and it would be inappropriate for me to try and do that. But probably massage is one. We've got Rolfing, maybe even a chiropractor. We've got Pilates. I've done that too. And those people that specialize in that discipline are going to be far better off going to a specialist in that rather than just even attending a class at the gym. Yoga.
And do you do Pilates and yoga yourself? Is there those things that you do?
I do on occasion. Mm-hmm. Yoga's quite well for me.
Yeah.
And I did Pilates for a little while. I would probably benefit enormously from that. It's just not as convenient for me to.
Well, I know this personal trainer who might be able to help you get your motivation to go back to the Pilates. Yeah. It's just interesting to me because, again, you know, fitness, an idea about what fitness looks like, you know, in terms of certain parameters versus, like, I mean, I think of core strength, and so it seems like Pilates and yoga, you know, the flexibility is such an important piece, and how strong the person's core is, like all those things can actually prevent injury and allow the person to do more, you know, than they thought they could do if they're sort of backing down on the output kinds of things and do a little bit more of the structured strength training and core work and flexibility training. So that's just interesting to me, like how just achieving that balance for people.
And I'm glad that you mentioned balance, because that kind of just pops in with that. So we have balance. We have work and life balance, mm-hmm. and you have balance within your activities and within a session or training session or exercise, that we have some sort of strength component and flexibility, and that you include balance and oftentimes core work that's included with that. I've also started training a little bit more with agility. So that's just, you know, for reactive training. You know, there's ice outside. If we slip and we fall, then there is specific training that you can utilize to help you do that and maybe not fall.
Mm-hmm. Or fall gracefully or with less damage.
With less impact, perhaps.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, I don't know anybody. I mean, who here gets through the winter without at least slipping once, you know? And so all you have to do is slip wrong, and that's it. It's, you know, you can break. It's so easy to get hurt. So that seems like it's a really important component of what you're doing.
It's good, and the balance. And it doesn't have to be anything more than just doing a single leg balance.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah.
That's going to work your core. That the whole point with our bodies is to make sure that we remain upright. So the exercises that we would be doing in order to achieve that can be pretty comprehensive, and there's a lot of them to do. So if you don't like to have to do a certain movement, then let's change it up. I like to be able to provide a toolbox or tools, if you will, mm-hmm. and some variety.
I read an article when Robert Downey Jr. was training for filming Iron Man movies. His personal trainer, he said, look, I just can't bear working out at the gym. This is Robert Downey Jr. saying, I just can't lift. This is just too boring. I need to do something different. And so the personal trainer set up like wheelbarrows full of concrete, had him, you know, basically pull all these things out of a junkyard and just start balancing objects while walking across a thin, you know, wire rope thing, just doing a tight rope, and just all kinds of crazy, bizarre things that he would do in his backyard. And he got results. I mean, he really did. And it's actually functional strength rather than just bulking up with muscles.
It is functional, and functional is kind of a buzzword, I think, in the fitness community. But one thing that is on the uptrend or trending is body weight training. So you can utilize, you know, you don't have to have the weights or the systems that you would have in a gym, but you can utilize things like that or other bands or just your body weight in order to accomplish.
That's one of the things goals you have here is, and why hire a personal trainer is you want to exercise at home. And so I think it's common for people to go and purchase some expensive exercise piece of equipment that they saw on TV, or, you know, it's an impulse buy. Oh, I'm going to get this thing.
I cannot tell you how many patients we have that it's just freely acknowledged. I've got whatever those Bowflex things are. They've got it unused in their basement.
It's a coat hanger, you know.
It's laundry.
Laundry gets on there, you know. And so to set up a home gym, you know, a home exercise gym kind of set up, you know, just so you've got what you can do in terms of strength training and a little bit of cardio. Like, I got this little elliptical thing on Amazon for, I think it was less than $80. It doesn't even have the hand things on it, but I used to be an aerobics instructor, so I just do that. And then I learned, like, Mercola.com has this thing called Peak 8, where you do a 3-minute warm-up, and you do these intensity intervals where you do 30 seconds intense and then 90-second recovery. You do 8 of those, and then you do another 3-minute cool-down. It's like 20 minutes. So you can get a workout in 20 minutes. And it's just this little itty-bitty elliptical thing. And then between that and doing yoga and doing push-ups and sit-ups and stuff, I can get a workout at home. I don't need anything else, you know, really. I mean, I've got some 5-pound weights, but I could use soup cans. So what kinds of creative things do you set up for people at home?
Well, it's funny that you should mention the soup cans, because I've used that one before, or water jugs. If you don't have weights, you can utilize that. Bands and the exercise bands are really portable, mobile for those that are traveling mm-hmm. a lot. You know, you've got your hotel rooms. Mm-hmm. So the beds or benches, you can do tricep dips on the bench. You can do just squats or lunges in a hotel room. They're pretty comprehensive. With weights, or you could use pillows, something like that, to do a squat and a bicep curl or an overhead press. Just getting a little bit more movement, taking the stairs instead of the elevator, parking a little bit further away from the entrance to a building in a supermarket. Take 3 or 4 laps before you start getting your groceries. There are lots of different ways to start moving a little bit more than you would. But you have to do it on purpose, mm-hmm. I think. We don't necessarily think about that.
Yeah, you have to get a little creative. I know there's been times when I was staying in hotels and the hotel was big enough where I could run the stairs in the hotel, you know, and just start from the bottom and run all the way up to the top and go back down and do it again. It's kind of like running stadium stairs, you know. So it's a little creative thing that you can do if you want to get your run in and you can't get outside to do it because the weather's not great. But you can run the stairs. But just make sure you don't get locked in the stairwell, because that can happen.
There's something else. Yeah. There's a trainer and author named Sean Phillips, and one of the things that he said is when you're doing movements, you want to really be clear with your intention and awareness of the movements, very deliberate. Like, you could just walk and you're just walking. But if you walk and there's a certain amount of intentionality you're bringing, you're going up the stairs and you're really efforting, you're really flexing and really working your body very intentionally, you can get a very different kind of workout. So there's a certain aspect of awareness that they can actually change what would normally be no exercise or very little can turn into actually a good workout.
Or for those that have been doing these same movements over and over again, that I certainly would be able to provide a different perspective from that. So either just initiating a movement with a different muscle group, or you know, there's some intention with that. But I think of like crunches, you know, or you know, ab exercises, because we would all like to have flat abs, but there are no, you know, there's not a fitness, you know. You're not going to be able to just spot just on that one area. There's going to take a lot of other ideas in order to make that. But the
what do you think about the Wii Fit? What do you think about that? I'm just curious what you're. I know a lot of people who love their Wii Fit.
That's it. That's
yeah, I think it works.
Like they're working.
They think they're moving a little bit more than they would ordinarily.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I actually think it's pretty cool. There's like Wii Yoga, and I have one woman who's in her 70s, and she always loves to tell me. Like I get to hear what she is on the Wii Fit. Like the Wii Fit gives her feedback depending on how she does in the workout and like what her relative age is. And so often she's like 28 on the Wii.
That's pretty great.
I'm 28. On a Wii Fit,
huh? Well, that's pretty inspiring, you know.
Well, I was going to say that's some feedback there going to be inspiring or motivating for you to continue doing it, right? If that tells you that that you're actually 28 when you're in your mid-70s.
I think it's brilliant, actually. I mean,
I would like to do that every day.
Right?
Then.
Yeah. Well, she says sometimes it tells her actual age, but you know, a lot of the time she shows up on the Wii Fit way younger, and then, so for her that's motivation to keep doing it. But it seemed I was rather skeptical of it at first, but I can't tell you how many people talk about it and love their Wii Fit, so I have come to a different view on it because it seems to have accomplished that whatever that magical thing is that gets people off the couch to exercise, somehow that that thing's doing it. So more so than the treadmill that they spent, you know, how much money on, and that's the coat hanger now. So go Wii Fit.
You know, I wanted to ask you if you've got some stories of transformation that you'd like to share. Just folks that maybe you've worked with, and in the time that you've worked with them, you've seen something really inspiring happen.
Well, a couple things. I think one of my favorite things that I see, and it takes a while with working with individuals, and by a while I mean probably a year to a year and a half. But I mentioned earlier that I oftentimes am working with beginning exercisers, so people that are not going to the gym before they met me or before they hired a personal trainer, and we are meeting sometimes, you know, between 1 and 3 times a week for that time. And there's always going to be months where you might not be able to meet, but in general, or weeks, and in the whole perspective that we are looking for a healthier lifestyle, that a few weeks out of the year or out of your lifetime is not a big deal, you know, but that those individuals that after working with me for that amount of time say, hey, I kind of miss coming to the gym. But to me, that's kind of a win. Like, I feel like I've introduced you to activity and being a little bit more active and taking a little bit more responsibility for your health. And to me, that's feedback that says, hey, it's working. That worked out really well.
Right. I mean, it's a lifestyle shift, basically a window into it. I mean, the way I think of it is that without that, one's destiny looks very different. Without actually developing some kind of affinity or orientation towards fitness, I mean, you can see what that actually turns into at age 70, turn 80. And if a person actually has a shift towards actually, you know, learning about fitness and being able to make some strides in that direction and actually miss it, if they fall out of it, something has shifted internally. They've got something new in their life that literally could change, you know, how things shape up in their later years.
Indeed. And it doesn't have to be big things. I think one of my philosophies is that small changes can make a really big difference. So that doesn't mean that, you know, I also see that going to the gym or you setting ourselves up for failure, you know, if we haven't set those goals that are reasonable and attainable, that we get discouraged with that and then quit altogether with the program. And so having somebody like a personal trainer or having a group or a community of people that you're working with that can help you through those times will make a really big difference. But ultimately, yes, changing your lifestyle.
And you talked early on, but we were talking about things that get in the way. And, you know, family commitments is one of them. Have you worked with families, like, as a whole? You know, worked with mom, dad, and the kids to, you know, to create some sort of exercise routine? Is that something that you do? Or is that kind of out of your scope? Or is it just not happened yet that anybody's asked you to do that? Because it seems to me that, like, when we're talking about changing diet or changing, you know, everybody in the family has to be on board because everybody's eating the food together, and it doesn't help if just one person's making the change. So it seems like it's kind of that way with exercise. What's your experience with that?
It could. I haven't trained whole families. I certainly haven't done it all at mm-hmm. once. Yeah. You could actually explore some group training. Mm-hmm. So one thing that's also quite popular now is small group training, so that you could have either a family or you could have a group of people that were kind of interested or similar goals. And we talked about financially that this could be a little bit more affordable. Maybe not if it was the whole family that was coming in. But I've certainly trained wives and husbands.
Yeah,
and
like couples. Yeah, so like couples. Working them together. Yeah. And if you were working with a couple, would that be generally like they're doing the exercise together, or is it you're working with one and you're working with the other one at different times, or it just depends on their schedule?
I think it depends on the schedule, but it's that's a good forum, I mm-hmm. think, to do a small group training to train them both mm-hmm. At the same time if the schedules are meeting. Oftentimes for me, it's easier to have our initial meetings would be separate just for time-wise, but as far as setting up a program that they could do together, mm-hmm. that's easy.
I just think that was hugely important because if one person's trying to change, they need the support of their significant other and the family. Yeah,
that's a big one.
Yeah, and it's oftentimes that one person is really inspired when the other one isn't, but that creates sort of a creative friction in a relationship too. I know for Samantha, if she starts really getting totally into doing yoga, and I've been out of it for it's probably been about 6 months now, so I'm talking about this in real time, I'm starting to really feel the pressure. I'm like, okay, I got to get back in. And so
Bikram's calling you.
I know. So but anyway, that's what I think makes relationships dynamic and fun, is that you know it always kind of, we can pull each other up.
For sure. You talked a little bit about like accountability or the feeling like, oh, I'm not making it to yoga, and you have somebody that's kind of just, you know, encouraging, you know, silently or maybe not.
Well, he keeps telling me he's going to take a Zumba class, so I'm waiting. I got the bells.
Super fun.
You can borrow my bells if you want to go to Zumba.
Okay, I will go to Zumba. I will do it.
All right, you heard that. We're on the radio.
I'll do it before the end of 2013.
Okay. All right, it's a deal. We're going to
really
do fun. Zumba.
It's
a blast.
Yes,
yeah.
It's really
I
fun.
I love Zumba. That just goes back to, like, if you can find a way to make it fun.
If Mike, the station manager, joins me.
Oh.
Uh-oh.
We're getting a non-committal sort of nod, sort of maybe isn't the program almost over yet? Don't you guys need to wrap it up? Kind of gesture. So, but I think that's just so important, coming back to that, like doing something that you love. And I know it's cliched, but it's true. Like, I love to go to Zumba. It's fun. So I'm going to make sure I make it. I didn't make it this week because I had other commitments, because we had somebody staying in our house and we were hosting a workshop and I missed it. Because it's such a – I just love it. It's fun. It makes me smile. So finding something that does that for you just seems really important.
I think so. Mm-hmm. Or finding people that are interested in doing mm-hmm. similar activities and can help provide you with a little bit of accountability, or, if you're not making it to the session, that you know that they notice that you weren't there.
Yeah.
And that
Absolutely.
Is one of the big advantages to joining, like, group fitness classes mm-hmm. or would be small group personal training – or the Zumba class.
Yep. Hey, so we're coming down to the last minute, and so just one more time for our listeners, could you remind everybody who you are and what your website is, and what's the best way to contact you and your phone number?
And are you taking clients right now? Are you do you still have room in your practice?
I'm not taking any clients right now, typically, but the best way to contact me is to check out the website, www.fireweedfitness.com. Jessica Hogan, usually go by Jess, and my contact information is on that website. I certainly am interested in maybe even doing telephonic consult. I can point you in the right direction. I consider myself to be an educator and somebody that can help you find what it is that you're interested in.
Great.
Thanks so much for joining us tonight, Jess.
Thanks, everyone. Have a great night. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Thank you for joining us on The Bridge to Everywhere, broadcasting on KVRF 89.5 Big Cabbage Radio in Palmer, Alaska. Like us on Facebook at Bridge to Everywhere to access more information, links and resources from our guests and show topics.